welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And you would think that with all the money that we're paid for doing this show that I could remember to actually turn the volume knobs up instead of we're just talking into nothing. It was kind of like yesterday when we were doing the basketball game. We did this phenomenal open only to look at George to our right and Harry to our left, and both of them say, yeah, we're not on the air. And then the second open was not nearly as good as the first one.
Only the four of us will ever know.
Only the four of us.
How good it was.
I know. It was pristine. It's kind of like we've all had this experience where you're in college or high school and you write a paper. And you know, the kids today will not know this because they're on Google Drive and it saves it every 5 seconds. But you write a paper and you're exhausted. And you probably dealt with this in law school. You're exhausted and somehow you don't hit save, or you do what they do in the movies, which is you just turn the computer off on the side. You know, that used to be the staple of movies in the 80s and 90s. Like, they don't actually hit save. They just turn the thing off and the thing automatically saves. And you wake up in the morning and you're like, I'm ready to go, and you can't find the paper.
Is there anything worse?
No.
Whether it's a paper or you're broadcasting or podcasting, you think you've finished your work, you're happy with it, and it's just not there.
It's just gone. And it's not like you did it on carbon paper. It's not like it can be recreated at all. It's, I don't know. You go back and you look at great writers and like Ernest Hemingway writing some of his books by hand as he went. Even my personal favorite, at least as far as music goes, Jimmy Buffett, you read some of the notes that he used to write songs. And he's writing songs and the initial take of the song bears no resemblance to the final song. Like, there's this really in between where somehow you take that lump of coal and turn it into a diamond. You don't really get that with anything electronic. So like, if you write it, or wrote it, I should say, and you know, Word Perfect or Microsoft Word or whatever WordStar that you were using back in the 90s and didn't save it properly, you know, you're done. That's it. Forget it.
That's funny. It sounds like he edits a lot and experiments and revises his lyrics.
Jimmy Buffett?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
Interesting, because yeah. I'd be the other way. I like to, I work a little bit more slowly when I'm writing, but I try to make sure I get it right the first time, and then I don't do as much editing down the road.
Huh. I am the complete opposite of everything. I write, and because I write like I talk. And I think this may be from the days that I was, there were two, well, I guess three things that formed it. One, baseball game ends, I have to write a recap in 10 minutes so that I don't get left in whatever L.P. Franz Stadium in Hickory, North Carolina before the days of Uber and have to figure out how the hell do I get home from the stadium. So I need to write the recap real fast. So that's one thing. Thing two was being a pharmaceutical rep. You get out of a doctor's office, I need to write the call notes as fast as I can so I can go see the next one. Because the more doctors I see, the faster I do it, the faster I am done for the day, or if I can even see more, the more stuff I sell. And then thing three was the days that I was a handicapper. If you're laying five or six games in a day, you have to be fast about doing it. You could seriously make that into an 8-hour job, or it could take you an hour. So like those three things together, like it's the unintentional, I got 10,000 hours without trying. And you know, so that I wind up writing like it's complete verbal diarrhea. And then I go back and read later and go, you know what? That really wasn't all that bad. It's logical. The real bummer, I guess that's why I like doing the show, is I tend to write so much for work, for other people, and helping them with what they're trying to do. And in most cases, it's grow business, get PR, whatever. I tend to write so much for other people that one of the things that I really enjoy, which is writing, I don't do. I don't do as me. And so, you know, I was in a meeting with a client a few weeks ago, and we were talking about, she says, what do you do best? And I said, I write. And she says, well, that's awesome. That'll be helpful for me with this project. And I said, you know, I want it to be helpful for me. Like, there's something in there. I just need to actually find a way to barf it out and have it be a book.
Yeah, well, the other thing is writing is time consuming. Talking, not so much. It's a lot easier to convey yourself quickly when you're talking.
Yes.
And especially in a situation like this where you don't really have a chance to edit, go back, do it twice. We're here. We're recording.
No, we edit the show every week. Like, we go through and refine it. It's polished and nice, just like our basketball pregames. So, all right. So last night, today's Thursday, and you're hearing this on Saturday. So Wednesday night, to be clear.
First round playoff game.
First round NHIAA girls playoff game. The number 4 Bedford Bulldogs hosted the number 13 Exeter Bluehawks. It was an interesting game. It was frantic and frenetic, and Bedford won by what, 31? Was the final 79-48?
Yeah, after beating Exeter by 15 in the regular season.
Yeah, it's interesting. You look at that team and the three seniors who all have different games. Allie Morgan is a very able point guard who I think could probably dribble through a grocery store without actually hitting anybody on Sunday afternoon. Like, it's, you watch her and you think about Market Basket or Whole Foods or Hannaford and how cramped the aisles are and people with carts and whatever, carriages, as everybody says here. You think about that and Allie could get through that completely unscathed. Like, she's got handles.
Yeah, because she goes low to the ground with the dribble to split the double team. And you're right. But I loved a lot of her passes in that game on Wednesday night. Just some no-look passes, and we talked during the broadcast about how Exeter was going with this box and one, and Allie did such a great job of penetrating the zone and then finding the open player, and that was the hard thing. Exeter wasn't able to guard everybody, which is something that happens with the zone. You lose track of people, and Allie always found the player that was open.
So we'll get to the players that were open in a second. The other seniors, Emma Rosenbaum, was one of the players who was open. She made 5 shots and scored 10 points. Nice game for her. And Amanda Jonas is the third senior. And when I think of Emma, I'm thinking a longer defender, somebody who gets out there on the perimeter, moves athletically, creates steals, creates turnovers just by hustle, just by desire. And so... And Allie, to a degree, will do that, but Emma, just by her size, is able to do that a bit more. And then you have Amanda Jonas, who is a rock down low and scored 2 points in last night's game, but was constantly contributing on defense just sort of by disrupting things. And it plays extremely hard, but the three of them have vastly different games. And when you look at those three and... there's one thing that they share in common. It's just desire. They are all intense, tough players. And I look at the three of them and, you said earlier in the season, Bedford lost to BG by 19. They lost 2 other games by a total of 3 points. BG is going to be the matchup, and it's going to be that semifinal game, assuming that all according to chalk. But the three seniors I look at and I go, I really feel like they're just bound and determined. They are on a mission.
Desire is a great word for them. We see it on both ends with Allie. She plays so hard, took a lot of hard hits yesterday. She's not backing down from contact. Emma defensively.
Allie was like the Swiffer player of the game yesterday. She was constantly cleaning the floor.
Yeah. Same thing with Isabella and not getting those early foul calls. But Emma Rosenbaum, you described it well, her defense, her length. She really has a unique way of always extending her arms and wreaking havoc. And then Amanda Jonas is just a battler in the paint on both ends. And one of the fun things that happened last night, in addition to your recognition of her helping to beat the press, and we've seen that throughout the year where she has that versatility.
Yep.
There was one moment that I really liked where Isabella King had the ball as Bedford was trying to break the press. She started to face a double team. She turned and saw Amanda. She immediately passed to her. And you could see that she had full faith in her to help break the press.
Right.
Which is really not something you generally do with your center.
Oh, it's great.
Typically, at all levels, your center is in danger of not having very good hands to, first of all, catch the pass in a press, let alone dribble up and break it. And everybody on the team realizes that she does it, and they need to use her talent in that way.
She is a very athletic big, and one that I just don't think gets the credit that she deserves, but is, you know, she scored 2 points last night, but her contributions in the game were widespread. And, you know, breaking the press, something completely underrated for a big, but that's the one that gets ignored as you're going up the court, is the big. The guards are the ones who are getting the focus, and to have a big that can do that makes a big difference. Now, pun not intended. By the way, my wife last night, during the game, I had said something about the Valentine's Day game against Exeter, and you made a comment about it being sweet.
Yeah.
Was that intentional?
Of course.
Oh, nice.
She caught that?
She caught that.
That's unbelievable.
Dude, I was tired. I've been up since 4:30. It was pitchers and catchers yesterday morning, so I have to be at McKelvey at 6. Or 6:30. So yeah, Wednesdays I'm usually just completely trashed by the time I get to about 8. As somebody told me earlier this week when they found out when I woke up, they said God's not even up at that time.
That's early.
Yeah, it's early. So all right, the ones that usually are unheralded. So we had Isabella King, who scored, what'd she have, 15 last night?
She finished with 15.
Allie had 23 on 5 threes. She had a great game, just super impressive. And when you have a point that can shoot like that and is confident in that shot, that really forces somebody to spread their defense. And you could see how having her hit like that eventually will lead to points for Amanda Jonas if she's left alone. But in last night's game, the one who was playing the role of Cedric Ceballos, sort of picking up the trash a little bit, was Sophia Mompini. And she had 15, and we've never seen her rain like that, but really, she was making it rain.
Yeah, I believe that would be her career high, at least in terms of the home games we've covered.
Yeah.
She scored 11 in the first quarter.
It was amazing, and so much confidence.
And it's nice. I mean, she started all year, so she's gotten all that experience, and we have seen her have success over in that right corner. Seems to be her favorite spot. She shoots a lot of threes from the right corner, but she also shoots those mid-range jumpers, and that's where she started off and got rolling early, was in that right corner. And again, it was one of those situations where Allie and others were finding her open in the zone. And the thing I like is that Bedford made 8 three-pointers last night. You mentioned that Allie had 5, but then there were 4 players who hit threes. Sophia hit 1, Emma Kazajanski hit 1, and Isabella hit 1, and that's a real benefit to have as you continue through the playoffs, is multiple players who not only are capable of hitting threes, but who have the confidence of, well, yeah, I just hit a 3 in that playoff game, so I'll hit a couple more in this one.
Well, and it makes a big difference for Jonas and Penick down low, because it creates a little bit of space for them to work. And, you know, those are two who had quieter nights on offense, but their contributions obviously were noticed during the game. So do you think, you know, because you've had much more experience with higher level basketball than I have, how much do you think goes into game preparation where Coach Gibbs might have known, hey, we're going to see this zone from Exeter here. There's going to be somebody open, whether it's Mompini or Rosenbaum, and those are probably going to be your best two options out of that. How much preparation goes into those two players in the days leading up to a game?
Well, I think it depends on the game, the opponent, what stage of the season you're at, and how much scouting you've done and been able to do. I think it is a mixture of scouting beforehand, game planning, preparing for specific defenses like you're talking about. I think that happens a lot. But the other key is being able to adjust on the fly when something happens that you're not expecting. I think that particular box in one is something that Coach Gibbs was not expecting, not because he's not prepared for everything, but because he called that early timeout where he doesn't usually do that. And then you saw Bedford, you know, perform pretty well offensively. They're up 22-6 after the first quarter.
Right.
So I think that's what happened on that occasion. But I think even at this level, there's a lot of scouting going on. Earlier in the season, for one of Bedford's home games, I saw the BG coach walking through the stadium. So all of these top teams are certainly scouting each other in person when they can. And then definitely by video as well. I mean, the next playoff matchup for the girls is Saturday night against Nashua South, and that's the team that Bedford faced in its home opener this year. So Coach Gibbs has that game tape, and I'm certain he's going to break that down. So I think it goes both ways, where you're scouting on tape whenever you can and then adjusting on the fly. And we know that Bedford is looking ahead to BG in the semis if they can get past Nashua South. And, of course, they have played Bedford or played BG in big, tough games year after year. But I mean, I remember talking to Coach Gibbs, we both did, before that regular season BG game, and he talked about working against their various presses for the whole week of practice leading up to it.
Right.
And now I imagine he's been talking about it at different times throughout the year. What happened in that game against BG? How are we doing against other teams who play a full court press, all in preparation for hopefully this semifinal match against BG next week?
Well, from talking to some of the parents too, they were with BG. I don't remember what the circumstances were that BG ultimately won by 19, but this is a Bedford team that knows that it can play with Bishop Girton. So it'll be interesting to see. You, as Gene Hackman put it in Hoosiers, we can only what was the quote? You can only focus on the next game. But that's I think that's a pretty widely adopted mantra among coaches, is that we got to win the next one to get to the one after that. And in order to get there, you're going to have to get by a Nashua South team that has improved during the season. And it's the they came in as a 12 seed. So you always got to look for the 12 over the 5 in the NCAA tournament.
Right. Hopefully not the 12 over the 4 here. But you're right, Nashua South has improved, and they've played a lot of close, low-scoring games. They just beat Central 44-40 in the first-round game, and I had a chance to go back and look at part of the game tape of that season opener that we did between Bedford and Nashua South, and they started out in a 2-3 zone, and then they went to man defense, and I think that's, Bedford was able to pull away and win that one by 24, but to me, they look to be a well-coached team and disciplined defensively, and it seems like they're trending towards really trying to make it more of a low-scoring game, and so that'll be the key is, what do they come out and do defensively to try to slow down Bedford's offense, but I'm confident that they'll be ready for the challenge.
It will be a lot of fun to see. You and Corey have that call on Saturday night, so if you're listening to Saturday morning show, you'll hear this. And that'll be your reminder either to get to the gym and support the girls or listen to it or watch it.
And they did change the tip-off. It's going to be 6 p.m. now on Saturday.
Okay, there you go. The Hoosiers quote is, Coach Norman Dale, there's a tradition in tournament play to not talk about the next step until you've climbed the one in front of you. I'm sure going to the state finals is beyond your wildest dreams, so let's just keep it right there. I got to go back and watch that movie.
Oh, it's...
I've seen it easily 30 times.
Oh, at least it's a top five for me. Classic.
I love all those lines. It's like a book that you can pick up on and flip to any page, and you're immediately sucked in because it's such a good story. So the other thing I wanted to touch on, and we'll hit boys basketball too, is when we talk about supporting the team. First of all, last night the gym was cold. The shooting was not, but the gym was.
Yeah, we got a little burst of cold air there in the second half.
It was freezing. I don't know, you may have gone the other direction. I stopped and talked to Justin O'Neill and Connor Butts on my way out of there, and they were wearing togas.
Yes.
doing their best impression of Julius Caesar and Brutus. For that, but I said, what's with the togas? It looked like a Latin club meeting.
It did.
And no, they were just there. They were just showing out to support the girls. And I love that. I have all the appreciation for that. That's this time of year, that's what it's about. Like, and for kids like Connor and Justin, who are seniors both, who both, again, very intense players with a great deal of desire. For the two of them to take a couple hours and risk their dignity to watch the girls. It was not unnoticed, and it was certainly appreciated.
Yeah, it was certainly a fun little aspect of the experience in that first round game, and they obviously are getting themselves in that playoff mentality and getting a feel for it as they gear up for next week.
Yeah, they start a week after the girls, which is a weird scheduling quirk, but a quirk nevertheless. It probably has to do more with gym scheduling than anything else, that you're trying to get those first-round games out of the way. But the boys had a tough loss to Salem on Tuesday night, 57-55 on a buzzer beater. They play again Friday night at home, is that right?
Correct, against Merrimack.
And then it's playoff time. So what is it looking like as far as their seeding right now?
Yeah, so it's been very bunched around that 6-10 area. They dropped to ninth with that loss. They're 10-7, and they're going to face off Friday night against Merrimack, 12-5. So a real good test as they head into the playoffs. And they've had a lot of close games this year with, final spreads of 3 or 4 points. So they're going to be battle tested and ready to go.
Yeah, they are a team that I think most of us would look as the season has gone on and say, this is a team that could certainly go a long way in the playoffs. Like, we really just don't know what to expect. We've seen them even within the span of the same game. We saw it against Goffstown. They come out and they're struggling, and then all of a sudden it looks like they can't miss, and they wind up boat racing Goffstown, or like Portsmouth, where all of a sudden they're down, they're tied, they wind up losing the game. I don't know. You're not quite certain which team you're going to get.
And the teams around them in the standings, Wyndham, they lost that buzzer beater at home by 2 points. Portsmouth, you mentioned that 4-point loss. Winnicunnet, who they just beat by 3. Salem, they lost by 2. Those four teams are all potential first round matchups. So it's likely going to be a real war in that opener.
It should be interesting. The Nordic teams, Nordic Skiing, had their best finishes ever.
Tinker to Evers to Chance?
Yeah. The boys wound up finishing fourth in the state. The girls were the state runner-ups, or runners-up. So congratulations to the Nordic teams as well for what they were able to accomplish this season. That is a tough sport and not a glamorous sport by any stretch, but it really requires a lot of work and endurance. And on a day like yesterday, where the kids are at school at 6 a.m. and going up to a race in Gorham, like, that's not really an easy thing to do for either the parents or the kids. So our congratulations to those Nordic teams for all their hard work. Anything else on the local front that you've seen that you want to touch on? I know Little League signups are still going on, at least for, you can sign up at any age, but the teams have not been assigned yet for the kids who are in that 8 and under age group. So keep that in mind if you have a child who might be interested in playing baseball. Anything else on the local front that you wanted to hit? The girls' varsity hockey team closed with a win in their season. Boys ice hockey team now in the playoffs, but anything else to hit?
No, I was just going to mention hockey. The boys finished with that 2 seed. They're going to play Wyndham in the quarterfinal round. I'll have to check the schedule on that. I believe it's Saturday, isn't it?
I believe it
Saturday
is Saturday.
At 1 p.m.
Okay, so.
And I believe Harry's going to have that broadcast. So, again, that'll be later today if you're listening to this on Saturday morning.
Going
to
be a very busy day for Harry. But we all know that there's nothing, aside from the Buffalo Bills, that he enjoys more than broadcasting hockey. So Harry will be out there at the rink for it. You'll have that game on. And then Saturday night, you and Corey Munstertiger will have all the action from the Bedford High Gym as the girls try to roll on and set up that semifinal matchup against BG, which would be then the following Wednesday night. So a lot of stuff going on, man.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Exciting time of year.
It's a fun time of year. March Madness or Insanity or whatever we're actually able to call it is right around the corner.
It's funny. I was going to say, last night during the broadcast, the restraint you had with your language talking about March.
I wasn't sure what I'm allowed to call it. Like, I can't refer to that in print.
You didn't call it what you just called it. And I was surprised. I mean, I've never heard of somebody who's as big of a basketball fan as you show so much restraint.
It was, I was concerned about a lawsuit, and then I realized that if they're going to go after me on Bedford 105.1, like, they are far bigger
fish
to fry, dude. Yeah.
There are going to be lots of lawsuits they're going to have to file.
Truly. You know, my biggest concern with the NCAA tournament is that USC doesn't get screwed by the selection committee this year. I mean, that's really it. Like, they've made their statement, swept the Arizona schools last week. They've had a good year.
Including a half-court shot at the buzzer.
Yep, a 72-foot shot at the buzzer. You know, but they're a team that could surprise some people if they actually get the opportunity to go and play in the tournament. If the East Coast bias doesn't reign supreme. I don't know, man.
You sound like somebody who's been wounded by that quite recently.
I was. I know. Mean, I'm still licking my wounds. So, but yeah, a lot of stuff going on in the world of sports. Spring training. We'll hit some of this stuff. And, of course, a certain New Orleans NBA basketball player. So we'll hit all this stuff in a little bit. Take a quick break. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports. I'm Bedford 105.1, Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And I was out of state for a few days, and I guess that's the best way, if you are having a bad streak of gambling, to stop your bad streak of gambling, leave the state of New Hampshire.
Yes.
Because then you you can't gamble anymore, because it knows. DraftKings knows when you leave the state, you know, hey, there's... this is verboten. You can't do this anymore.
Game off.
The other not recommended way, if you're having a bad streak of gambling, is, and of course, all these stories start with Florida man. You were a Florida man once. Florida man, Benjamin Tucker Patz. Well, I guess he's from New York, but he was threatening down in Florida, I guess. He was 23 years old, or is. He's still with us. I am unclear on who gave him the nickname. Well, he gave himself the nickname Parlay Pats.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't know. My name, if I was going to be a gambler, was Bad Beats Fox. I don't know. I really don't know. Like, but he is not very good at Instagram. He had 18 messages from his account to college and pro football and basketball players, more than 300 more threatening messages directed at players from anonymous accounts that authorities believe were linked to him. Your worthlessness costed me, obviously he's not an English major, and he definitely doesn't proofread his things, over $100,000 tonight. Sad. A December 22, 2019 message from Parlay Pats to a college basketball player said. He also placed a parlay wager on the Indians, four other MLB teams, and a professional tennis player. Roughly 45 minutes before the Indians played Kansas City, a Royals player received two direct messages on Instagram stating, "I will cut open the throat of your baby and you will die." Okay. It's also interesting that he has been conducting death threats against Patriots players. Oh, my God. Like, can you imagine? Like, I wonder. I don't know. It's just insane. He was threatening college players about slice. Anyway, just what point would you ever be like, this is a good idea, I'm going to do this?
Unbelievable. I'm not surprised that in this article it says that Pats did not immediately respond to phone and email messages from ESPN.
No, really?
Shocker. This is just outlandish. I guess you see this, some people get a little bit wacky and every corner of society, and it's strange to see it in this context.
No, this one is particularly interesting. You know, the other thing, too, if you're going to do something like that, you need to maintain a lower profile than this guy is doing. You know, I don't know.
He faces up to 5 years.
He should face up to 500 years in prison just for, like, come on, man. Like, this is not... That's not how this works. And you have to believe, too, that as this guy's going there and threatening these professional athletes and nobody's replying to it, or people are replying with things like, I'm going to call the police and you're going to wind up in jail, that he might think this is a bad idea.
Right.
Like, this is not a good business model, and maybe I should pivot now.
This is the time to pivot.
And at the end of the day, we should touch base and pivot and put that one on our desk and save it for later. So yeah, that's your update on complete idiots who, my hope is that this dude would get 5 years. My hope is that he would get more. And also, as part of his agreement, also be barred from ever gambling again.
Yeah, it's one of those things where sometimes the society needs a lesson like this in so many different ways. You can't threaten people, whether it's verbally or on social media. You can't make racist comments.
No,
on social media. If it's written, everybody's going to see it.
I enjoy gambling. Yeah, if it's written, truly, everybody's going to see it. I enjoy gambling. It has never, ever, ever, ever crossed my mind to ever do anything like that.
Right.
Like, not even close. I guess in the other moral of the story is, if you're an athlete, lock down all your social media accounts. Don't hear from any of these bozos. Like, the last thing you need going into a game is this bozo in New York State telling you that he's going to do bad things to your family or calling you racial slurs. Like, I got enough stuff to worry about if I'm worrying about the game without worrying about this clown.
Yeah, every player, or at least every team, should have somebody who's monitoring all these social media accounts and not responding to all this stuff, blocking people. I can't even imagine how many mentions some of these guys get with hundreds of thousands or even millions of followers. I mean, you would need a full-time employee to deal with all of it.
It truly is, and it's... Have you ever heard of the book, The 4-Hour Workweek?
Yes.
Okay. Tim Ferriss is the guy who wrote it. He's well known as a blogger, does podcasts. For our audience, if you haven't heard him, he's a really good listen, and he's a brilliant dude. He definitely works more than 4 hours in a week. That book is somewhat of a misnomer. I was attempting to follow the principles within it, and I failed miserably. And when you do that, sometimes you can backfire in the complete other direction. But no, Tim Ferriss was talking about the perils of being famous. And some of the things were, you can't separate the unimportant messages from the important messages. You have a lot of people who, because you're famous, assume that what you're saying is the gospel, and or assume that because you're famous and you are some kind of a thought leader, that they can use you as a sounding board. And when you don't reply to them as a sounding board, like, there are things that people in the general public will do because it's almost like the people who think that the soap opera characters are real, that because Tim Ferriss is on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, that we're friends. And because I like his tweets, we're friends. And that's not the case. But there are a lot of people who, tragically so, have stalked him, found him, stalked him. There are a lot of people who have, threatened to do bad things to themselves, or have confided things in him that are way outside of his purview. Things that, you and I or anybody wouldn't confide to close friends. People are confiding with this guy because they feel like he's emotionally invested in them. And so I can't imagine in this day and age that, I think being famous would have always been a challenge. But in this day and age, being famous, where in a lot of cases there are really no barriers between you and the public, because, there's value in somebody being able to get into your DMs, but at what cost? And that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, a little bit surprising that folks would specifically think that he would want to interact with them. If he's trying to limit his work week to 4 hours, he doesn't have any time for that.
Right. It is extremely difficult. So, I cannot even imagine that piece of it. But when you go back to it, the being famous, the other things that the athletes have never signed up for, that all of a sudden now you're forced to deal with, and then does the answer become just, get off of social media entirely? Don't read the comments section ever.
And you know what I hope for, as we talk about the NBA, and I know we're planning to talk about Zion, is somebody like him, who's still 19 years old, has incredible fame already and is on this incredible path to NBA greatness, Hall of Fame, you know, one of the most unique players with an incredible potential. You just hope that all this stuff doesn't affect him, because we've talked before about what an amazing personality he has. And even in the media, he's very open and honest right now. You know, he doesn't have all these scripted answers, and it's refreshing. And so you just hope that nothing happens along the way with all the millions of followers that he'll have that would influence him in a negative way.
I don't know. At some point, you have to think that if you are an athlete, it makes sense for you to be off. That being there is not a good place for you to be as you. That somebody, you know, whether it's you have an employee who monitors all your stuff and just keeps an eye on things, great. But as far as providing that level of no barriers between you and the public, you need to have some kind of a barrier, because you can get caught up in reading good things, bad things, and different things. You know, regardless, I can think of 100 athletes that, if not more, that could get so bogged down in that. And you look at a guy like LeBron, who, you know, Boston fans hate LeBron. I like LeBron. But a guy like that who draws so much attention and is really is trying to do a lot of good as well as he goes. And the fact that you deal with so many things that are preventing you from actually doing anything good or positive in the world, like, yeah, I'm sure that piece can be tough. Did you see, by the way, speaking of athletes who are good at social media and good writers, Trevor Bauer?
Uh-huh.
You catch that whole thing?
Yeah, he made big comments about some of the ideas coming out of the commissioner's office, and then I heard that he sat down with Rob Manfred.
I didn't hear about that. Okay.
Chatted things over this week, I believe.
Okay, I didn't hear about that piece. The piece that I was speaking more specifically about was Trevor Bauer pitching against the Dodgers. Bauer's now with the Reds, obviously, and was pitching against the Dodgers, but was telling them the pitches that he was throwing.
Okay, I missed that.
And this was a direct response to the stuff that went on with the Houston Astros.
So he was doing it this spring?
He was doing it this spring. I believe he did it on Monday. But for him, it was a big, you know, like, I'm trolling the Astros, basically, which that's kind of his MO. You know, that's who he has become. But, you know, regardless, there have been times that you and I have talked about him and not liking how he was going about things. I will say one thing for him. He is certainly a free thinker.
He is. And that's a perfect way to troll the Astros, and to do it with the Dodgers. That's just perfect.
Yeah. So Bauer was out there doing that. He was talking with Major League Baseball about some of the left-handed reliever stuff and
changes in playoffs.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, he's a smart dude, and they could do worse than to talk to him, because he is regardless, again, he's thoughtful. You know, and there are certainly things that I don't agree with him on. There are rabbit holes that he has gone down over the years that I don't agree with, but he is a thoughtful player who will not make a decision based on what's best for only him. He's a guy who will be logical and rational as that sort of stuff goes. So with ML, I haven't watched any spring training baseball this year.
I haven't either.
That's bizarre.
There's too much other stuff going on.
With what, the NBA or with Zion?
Both.
Okay. So give me what is your NBA scoop for the week then?
Well, I think the biggest story here on Thursday is what happened last night. Because what's coming up tonight is big. Steph Curry is coming back on Thursday night, so that will have happened by the time the show airs on Saturday. But last night, Wednesday night, was an exciting matchup. It was the Pelicans traveling to Dallas, and Zion got to play in a back-to-back for the first time all season. So this is a big step for the Pelicans and for Zion. They've really babied him and limited his minutes, you know, just been very strict with their program and how they get him ramped up. So he finally got to play on back-to-back nights, and it was against Luka Doncic and Dallas, and it was projected to be a high-scoring game, and it went into overtime, and it was a high-scoring, exciting game. Luka had a 30-point triple-double, and it was just fun to see the matchup of those two young players. We're going to be talking about that for a decade or two, And it's going to be really fun to watch. They're two incredible young players. But transitioning back over to the player props, this was the first time I bet against Zion, so to speak. His player prop for his points was 24.5, and for his rebounds was 7.5. And those are right at about his season averages. But I was projecting that he was going to play fewer minutes since he was on the second night of a back-to-back. And he ended up playing a career-high 35 minutes because the game went to overtime. But he did go under those totals, only 21 points and 6 rebounds. So that was good. But I'm not going to get into a habit of betting against Zion. It just made sense that night.
Yeah, he has been one who's overperformed. As he is in the league longer, I think what you'll see is more and more, the numbers will adjust to him, and he will become less of a good bet. But for now, he's still a solid one. So, he is one that, you brought up the point about him and Doncic. The two of them will be going at it for years. You would hope it'll be great for the league for the two of them to do it. Did you expect when he came to the NBA, did you expect that he was going to do what he has done as quickly as he has done?
Yeah, I did. I thought that his once-in-a-generation athleticism would translate to the NBA. I didn't agree with all of the commentary from analysts who would say, well, it's, this is college and it'll be a different story when he gets to the NBA and he can't shoot. I also think he's a better shooter than most. I think he has a fine form. You know, one of his first games, he hit multiple three-pointers in the NBA. He has struggled a bit on his free throw. The form, I think, is fine. He just, sometimes he's tired. He comes up short a lot. It's a little bit flat. But, he looks like an athlete. He's not a big who's just all clanky and awkward and weird muscular form. He's got a stroke, and I think he's slowly going to develop and become a better shooter. But yeah, I just think his incredible combination of speed, power, agility, feel for the game, I thought it would translate right from the start. And he's been terrific. He's put up numbers that really nobody else has in terms of his consistency, scoring at least 20 points a game as a teenager and shooting it at almost 60%. So I'm really excited about how he started, and I think the sky's the limit.
Yeah, it has been a lot of fun to see that. Certainly good for the NBA. Like we talked about last year with New Orleans, I think that's a market for the NBA that is a perfect NBA for them to, a perfect market for them to have a marquee star. It would have been really nice to see Anthony Davis there with him.
Oh, yeah.
To start things off. But, as it stands right now, the fact that Zion is doing what he is doing with kind of the remnants of a Lakers roster is nothing short of impressive. So we'll take a quick break and we will come right back. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Hanson on Sports. I'm Lauren Fox.
I'm Andrew Hanson.
And Hanson's going to do most of the talking because he actually watches sports. I don't. it's just been one of those weeks. The Red Sox, Mookie Betts is still playing for them?
Oh, no. He got traded to somebody else that pay attention to, the Dodgers.
I didn't see anybody wearing any stuff out there when I was out there. So, I mean, forgive me for not knowing because... you wouldn't know if you go out there because nobody seems to care.
About anything. That's unfortunate.
It's really just kind of a general disappointment is that, we're all pumped up here because we're Dodger fans, and the other Dodger fans that I know in town are also pumped up, and it just kind of goes really under the radar out there. We're just worrying about applying sunscreen and looking good and working on our tans, and I really have been doing a lousy job following anything.
One thing I will say about the Dodgers is I haven't been that big of a fan of Cody Bellinger. I don't really love his cool guy attitude.
Okay.
But I do like how he's come out strong in this issue
with
the Astros. I like how he's kind of gotten serious, stuck his neck out there a little bit, and really gone after the Astros.
Yeah, it that has been interesting. It's been interesting to hear how players from years past have come out against it as well. We talked about Jose Canseco a couple weeks ago, and Canseco basically saying, if you gave me the choice of doing PEDs or knowing what pitch was coming, I would have taken what pitch was coming. It makes a big difference to know that. I was told, and I don't, you know, I haven't paid attention to it. I think in the first three spring training games, the Astros had six batters hit by pitch. Again, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the answer. I do think for MLB, I would have really liked to have seen some kind of stricter punishment on the players who were involved and a little bit more investigation. And, you know, maybe an apology from the team. It's always a weird kind of gap when you leave a title vacant, but, you know, I wouldn't necessarily rule that one out either. Some of the stats that have come out about that whole thing are just eye-popping. One, the Astros had, you're an Athletic subscriber.
Yes.
There was an article about them having the lowest strikeout rate in the last 100 years.
The Astros?
Yes. I did not read it because I am not, I can't hop over that paywall. All right, I guess I won't hop over that paywall. The other thing, and I haven't gone back through to corroborate it, so I may do this while you're talking about something. Clayton Kershaw did not get a single swing and miss on an off-speed pitch, curveball changeup, in Game 5 of the 2017 World Series.
And what are his stats on swings and misses on those pitches for every other start?
You're talking about one of the guys who is the best swing and miss pitcher.
Yeah, what are the chances? And what are the chances that they've got that crazy low strikeout rate?
But, so the actual thing is, and this came from last week, and I'm going to Reddit. Tom Verducci made a comment. The Astros did not swing and miss at a breaking ball or a slider in Game 5 of the 2017 World Series. And 51 pitches. He is one of the best curveball pitchers in the history of baseball. Not in his prime in 2017, but awfully close to it. And did not get one swing and miss in Game 5 of the 2017 World Series.
Go figure.
Tell me.
What are the chances?
Just tell me. swing and miss rate Kershaw. We're going to look at that piece.
While you're pulling that up, I do want to mention commentary on the Astros from another former slugger. You mentioned Canseco, but Alex Rodriguez was back in the news this week because he really went after the Astros. And that was for a guy that we've all had some issues with because of his transgressions. It was really refreshing to see what A-Rod said. He was on the broadcast of a spring training game, and he came out and first of all, you know, made it personal and talked about how he'd made some really foolish mistakes and acted like, I forget what word he used, something like a buffoon. I mean, he really owned the, you know, the negative acts and choices that he made throughout his career. Talked about how it cost him $35 million, which, of course, he managed to make a boatload of money in the other seasons. But he said, you know what, the Astros just need to come out and apologize. And he said what he did was he went dark for a while and he really worked on revamping his image, being contrite, being genuine about that, and coming back and you know, redoing his image. I think he's done a pretty good job of that. And he said that's what the Astros need to do. I mean, come out and own it, apologize, and everybody would be looking at this and treating it so much differently. We wouldn't be talking so much about how many times they're going to get beaned this year because everybody's so angry that they won't admit it and apologize.
It is utterly amazing. Like, there's no, because I'm watching all 51 of the off-speed pitches he threw in Game 5 of the 2017 series, and not a single swing and miss at a ball in the dirt. Just crazy. Like, you, like, I just, it's like kryptonite. Like, these are major league hitters, but they're not that good. And then, you know, there's, who was it? The last one that somebody was, it was maybe Bregman hitting a bomb. Yuli Gurriel hitting a bomb there. Like, you look at this stuff and Game 5, 2017 World Series box score. This I'm curious about because, all right, first of all, that's the game that was 13-12 and went 10 innings. The Astros won it on a walk-off. The other thing that that accompanies that is, first, yeah, they did look at some called strikes. That's all fair and good, but they weren't cookies. They were called strikes that were outside corner, what have you. The box score will show you Clayton Kershaw, 4 2/3 innings through 94 pitches. So he threw 43 fastballs, 51 off speed. There's no way that he throws 94 pitches in 4 2/3 innings if he's getting swings and misses.
Right.
And there's no way that Kershaw gives up 6 earned runs in 4 2/3 innings in that scenario if he's getting swings and misses. So, you know, you cannot tell me against the premier off-speed pitch pitcher of his generation, possibly the last 50 years, because I go back far enough that Koufax isn't really in that equation if we go that far. If we go that far back, like, you're basically turning him into a fastball pitcher, which then turns him into an average lefty.
I can only imagine. I'm thinking back to when I was hitting, and I definitely had the most trouble against lefties. And if I'm sitting there trying to prepare for a 92-94 mile an hour fastball from a lefty, I mean, that's not very enjoyable. But if I'm doing that, that's what I'm gearing up for, and I'm timing everything to try to catch up with that 94 mile an hour fastball, especially if it's on the inside corner. And then if he throws me a big 12-6 breaking ball on the outside corner, I'm going to have a lot of trouble with that. But if I know going into that pitch it's going to be 12-6, I mean, that would make hitting 10 times easier.
Right.
And I would bet that I would be way better at everything, making contact, getting a hit. If I know that it's a breaking ball, then I'll time it. It won't surprise me. I'll sit on it, and I would expect to at least foul it off. So, I mean, those numbers don't surprise me at all.
Right. No, I don't disagree with you in the least. So we will take another quick break. Sorry, I keep having to do work, which is what's screwing me up as far as this show goes. So anyway, I'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
Hansen has a website.
A fun new website for you all.
I have.
This is the show, the potpourri show here. We may have tied a record with the number of segments.
Right, without any guests either. That's the astonishing part, truly.
It is. But we're going to add a fun little surprise website for you all since we have the opportunity for a little bonus segment here. And it's a website called tankathon.com. Which can go in a number of different directions, since Trusting the Process was in the news in the last 24 hours with Jeopardy and Joel Embiid. But tankathon.com is kind of fun. It's a website where you can look at every NBA team's remaining strength of schedule, and they've got it ranked from 1 to 30. It shows the toughest teams that each team still has to play, the easiest teams. And it's a good way of projecting win totals, where teams might finish in terms of seeding. And we're at that stage right now where there's a lot of maneuvering going on in both the East and the West for final seeding, which is going to be big, and it's going to be a really exciting NBA playoff season. But there's some interest in this at the top and the bottom. And I'm going to start with the bottom because, you know, when you think about tankathon and teams tanking, you think about Trusting the Process with the Sixers, who went and did it for years. But now this year's a little bit different because there's a surprise entrant into the runnings for the correct ping pong ball combination. It's the Golden State Warriors. After going to 5 straight finals, they currently have the worst record in the NBA.
What does it mean if the team is protected? It's got a little lock next to it.
On the website?
Uh-huh.
Protected?
This pick is currently not traded because it is protected 1 to 20. This pick is currently not traded because it is protected 1 to 10.
Oh, because when you trade a first-round pick in the NBA, you know, involving in a regular trade with another player, and you throw in a first-round pick, you can put a protection on it and say, you get our first-round pick, but if it falls in 1 through 20, we're going to keep it. So you only get it if it's 21 and later.
Huh.
Or if you protect it, you know, top three protected. That means if we win the lottery and we're first, second, or third, we get to keep our pick. And you can have a first-round pick later in a different season.
So what happens then? Like, let's say I trade a first-round pick and it's a protected pick, and I really decide I'm going to go into the tank, and hence tankathon. I decide that I'm going to go into the tank, and I don't have to give that pick up. Do I have to give it up the next year?
It always is part of the fine print in the trade. It'll say either the next year it's unprotected, and no matter where my first round pick is, even if it's number one, you get it. Or it might gradually decline, and you say it's top three protected this year. Next year it's top 10 protected. Then the third year it's unprotected. Or it might be it's protected 1 through 10, and then next year it becomes 2 second-round picks. So you can do it any way you want, but that's the way it goes. And you'll see down the stretch, even if last year was Memphis, they were right on that 6-7 range, and their first-round pick was going to go to Boston, but it was protected, I think, top 6 or 8. And so sometimes you'll see the strategy down the stretch of teams wanting to win or lose based on either keeping the pick or losing it, depending on the strength of the draft class that year. But what's interesting now with teams tanking is that the odds have changed with the ping pong balls. It used to be that if you had the worst record, you got a 25% chance at the first pick. And then right. It went down to 20 and then down to 15. But now they've really leveled it off. So all three teams that finish at the bottom have an equal 14% chance at the first pick. So this is a long way of saying that Golden State has a little bit of leeway here because they're last right now with 14 wins. Cleveland is next with 17. And then there are three teams with 19. So they basically have a four-game cushion on ensuring that they're one of the three worst teams. And the reason I bring all this up is because, again, Steph Curry's coming back into the lineup tonight, Thursday. And if he plays the rest of the season, then there may be a chance that they get out of the bottom three. But that'll be one of the fun things to watch on the bottom end of the standings is, you know, how much does Steph Curry lift them up, and does he pull them out of the cellar?
Right. And one man can only do so much. That's kind of the, like, he'll be all right, but it's not going to make as much difference as you would think. Like, they're still going to be pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, Durant is gone. Klay Thompson is going to be out the rest of the season. Draymond's been in and out of the lineup. So he just doesn't have this typical cast around him like he's had for so many years.
Right, and how much will he need to be babied as he's coming back into the fold? Because he is coming back from a torn ACL. Like, that's not like coming back from the sniffles. Like,
yeah.
It's going to take him a little bit to get back up to speed. They're not going to want to go overboard with his minutes either. And part of Curry's sort of stock and trade has been how hard he plays.
Klay has the ACL.
Oh, that's
Steph
right.
has the broken hand.
Right. So
thankfully,
yeah.
It's his left hand. So
yes, but still though, it's just
His handle is so important that it'll be fun to see if he's really 100% or not.
It was tough to remember which one of those guys had what because they all just seemingly went down.
And Durant had the Achilles.
Oh, dude, it was bad.
It was terrible.
Yeah,
and it was against Toronto, and that's who they played tonight.
I wonder what the percentage of boys between the ages of 7 and 11 who were huge Golden State Warrior fans a year ago is still there.
Right.
Or if they're Laker fans now, or Celtics fans, or Bucks. My guess is the Bucks have won over that demo.
That demographic, yeah.
Yeah, they've won over the kid demo. So we didn't have any guests this week, so I don't have to thank any guests. I thank our listeners for putting up with the fact that I broke this show into four segments for some bizarre reason. Thank you to Harry for the fact that he's going to have to edit all this stuff, sew it together like it's some kind of patchwork quilt. Thank you to George, Colleen, and Bill here at the station for all that they do. My broadcast partner, Andrew Hansen. I'm Lauren Fox. Be sure to have a great sports week. Go out and watch a game. Good game Saturday night at the gym. And whatever you're doing, don't coach from the stands. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.